Hello and welcome to the EG Studio. I'm Damien Wild, Editor-in-Chief of EG. We've taken our equipment up the road this week to the London Real Estate Forum, a heaving hubbub of decision-makers and influencers gathering in the capital. You can probably hear the noise outside. It's busy out there, but I'm pleased to say it's quiet in here. A good job too, as today we have one of the most important topics impacting on this sector to discuss. Clearly, mobile digital connectivity is essential to any modern economy, but digital networks require a substantial amount of apparatus to run them. Much of the network apparatus has been situated on buildings in urban locations, with the agreement of the real estate owners. But recent changes to the law risk pitting telecoms network providers against building owners. Clearly, we need a way forward. To find that way forward, I'm joined by three experts today. John Gravett is Head of Real Estate Management at Cluttons, Belinda Fawcett is General Counsel and Director of Property and Estates at Cornerstone, and Michael Watson is Head of Property Litigation at Shulman's. So Michael, if I can start with you, just to set the scene a little, it's the Digital Economy Act 2017 and the new Electronic Communications Code that has changed the landscape for property owners, investors, developers and occupiers. Briefly, how has it altered?
Well, certainly what we've seen, Damien, is that there are no the volume of deals being done to place infrastructure on property has pretty much dried up, frankly. You know, we've done this kind of work for many years, and previous networks have been rolled out quite successfully with consensual agreements between asset owners and the network operators. But pretty much from the moment that the new code came in December 2018, effectively the tap was turned off.
Okay, and what did the code change? Why was that tap turned off?
The fundamental issue that it's changed is the approach to valuation, which is effectively the backstop to any negotiation that might take place between landlords and network operators. And the reality of the situation, and it's a pretty stark reality, is that certainly from what we've seen, is that property owners have just chosen to disengage.
Okay. And Belinda, are you seeing that? Are property owners disengaging, and has the tap dried up?
Yes. So it is very slow since the code was introduced. We are now working in a very hostile environment, and I use the word hostile quite deliberately. But I think it's important at this stage just to take us back to what the code was actually introduced and why it was introduced, why the government was so keen to introduce this new legislation, which is to make it easier, quicker, and cheaper for the mobile operators to roll out their infrastructure across the UK. I mean, the government are really keen, and they have said on a number of occasions, the DCMS were, the minister was out the other day saying, you know, we want a truly digital economy. Unfortunately, without that, without the infrastructure that supports that, we're not going to get there. So I think it's really important. I'm not sure that landowners have actually accepted that principle. I think that is the main issue.
Okay, I'd be surprised if anyone disagreed with the principle. Maybe it's their own role and the role that they play in ensuring that that becomes a reality.
I think you'd be surprised. I think there is a huge resistance to the legislation and the implementation of that legislation. And I think, you know, I think everyone needs to come together and accept, put their hands up and say, yes, the purpose of it was to make it quicker, easier and cheaper. You know, the payments that we're going to make for the sites are going to reduce. But I think the biggest thing is that let's try and find a method of valuation. There has to be some sort of methodology. Previously, over the last 25 years, when mobile telecoms was introduced, there was no methodology around how you value. It was finger in the air and how much was everybody willing to pay. That's no longer a valid or a feasible way forward. So we have to find a proper method of valuation, as we do on the rest of the property industry. And that's really what we're trying to do. But unfortunately, there is a resistance at the moment from the landowner community.
Okay, well, we'll come back to the possible methodology, which sounds like a potential way forward. But I was struck by the word hostility that you said you used very deliberately. Just describe how that hostility manifests itself and where it's coming from.
Well, I think, there's been a lot of criticism of the infrastructure providers and the operators, which I think is unfair. We are all trying to implement a piece of legislation that was introduced by the government. So over the last 18 months, the operators, infrastructure providers, CTL, MBNL, we've been trying to implement that in the best way possible. We've been encouraged by the government to seek clarity from the tribunal under the terms of the legislation, and we've been pushing that, but we, as a result of that, we're being seen as being incredibly aggressive, and that's not the way forward. But in many instances, we have been unable to engage with site providers. So going back to what Michael said, we've been out there, we've approached site providers and site providers' agents. There's a huge amount of hostility with, amongst a lot of site providers' agents who are just unwilling to engage and have been unwilling to engage for about 18 months. So we've been going through tribunal. We have had some clarity, not always in our favour and not always in the landowner's favour, but that's the purpose of taking it to tribunal, that at least everyone comes out with some clarity about how the legislation is going to work. And we are changing our approach based on what the tribunal says, and we need the landowning community to do the same and to work with us to find a way through this. We're all in this together. It's the legislation. It's a piece of paper that was drafted by the government. We've got to make it work.
Okay, thank you. And John, as a firm, are you stuck in the middle here? Are you advising both sides and contributing or failing to perhaps burst that bubble of hostility?
Well, morning, Damien. Yes, we are caught in the middle, and I hope not failing. It's just an ongoing education process, and unfortunately, it has been hostile. Using those words, people have not wanted to see an ancillary income stream withdrawn. But the key is to try and educate people. There are different methods by which to regain that income stream, and that's why, for example, better digital connectivity, that'll improve an asset performance. So it's trying to educate those movement of the income stream to different areas to protect an asset and take it forward. Digital connectivity is what we need across the UK, in rural communities and in cities and in London, etc. So it's not specific to towns and urban areas.
Okay, and when you say educate people, do you mean both sides or do you mean principally landowners?
But both sides and the advisors. I think the advisors need to make sure that we upskill. A lot of the traditional agents and maybe legal advisors acting for the operators have been very much trained over that 30-year history work to date of very much doing sort of market values, looking at local evidence. Now the valuation methodology is quite different. It's more advanced and more akin to mainstream property type transactions and valuation methods. Therefore, maybe we got to bring the industry on and bring on our compatriots along there and educate them accordingly. Support already good individuals, but make them better.
Okay. And does that valuation methodology exist, John, or is it something that's being evolved? I'll be generous. Evolving.
It is evolving, and it's how it's applied. It's quite clear under the guidance you got, paragraph 24, 25, and 84 with regards to consideration and compensation. So we know how we're meant to value. It's just how we can try and make that in a positive and consensual way, and it's how people move toward that direction, which is proving the ultimate challenge.
Okay, thank you. And Michael, reading between the lines here, it sounds like it comes down to money, really, that perhaps the landowners aren't getting as much, or certainly aren't getting as much as they used to, and not as much as they think acting as host to this equipment is worth.
Yeah, I mean, the valuation methodology doesn't really matter to the landowner. You can cut it however you want. It's the product that comes out of the end of whatever that exercise is. And any landowner is going to look at that product, and at the end of the day, they're going to take a decision. It's either a go or a no-go. And the reality is that there is a certain level below which they will just go, it's just not worth endangering my asset, as they see it, encumbering my asset. And that's the problem. So there's no point in getting hooked up on the valuation methodology. You can use methodology A, B, C, D. You can present some really clever arguments to landowners that say, so absolutely, it's nailed on. Your land is only worth 100 quid a year or whatever. And they'll go, thanks very much, that's very interesting. That is insufficient to incentivise me to engage. And not one single landowner has ever come to me and said, no, we disagree with the fundamental principle of connectivity. We're all in absolute agreement on that. But at the end of the day, my question really would be, how are you going to incentivise the landowner to engage?
Okay, so it sounds like the carrot may not be big enough, but is the stick big enough? Does the code and the new legislative environment not require compliance?
The stick's really interesting, and yes, it provides a mechanism whereby ultimately you can drive the process through the tribunal, and probably at the end of that process get an agreement imposed against the will of the landowner at a rate that may not be to the landowner's liking, but we haven't got enough judges to roll out 5G in that way. So that isn't going to, it's not a quick process. So I mean, Belinda may disagree with me, but I don't think that we've got the judicial capacity to build a 5G network off the back of that.
Belinda?
I do believe that the tribunal are probably under-resourced, and I think this is something where the government need to review how we take this forward, because actually the whole process around the tribunal and the Para 20s is actually very time-consuming, costly for all parties, and it's certainly not the way forward. And that's certainly from our position, we are definitely driving for consensual deals. We don't want to go down the tribunal route. And we're only doing that at the moment to try and get the clarity around the legislation. But there's just something that I just wanted to pick up on what Michael said, because he mentioned about the valuation and that it's us putting forward this offer for the site and the landlord saying, well, that's not good enough. That's fine, but what we need is the landlord's representatives, whether they be agents or the solicitors, to come back and say, well, this is an alternative. This is the other way of actually valuing. This is how we see it. And actually, we are seeing deals going through where based on some of the tribunal decisions that we have had, so there have been two tribunal decisions, one rural and one in the urban areas. And, you know, following that, we have adapted some of our valuation methodology to follow the guidance that's been given by the tribunal in both those cases. But unfortunately, we are still seeing landlords, agents in particular, saying it's only one decision and we are not willing to engage with you until such time as we've had more than one. And sort of tribunal decisions, we've been told 7 or 8 is what we require. And unfortunately, that's not good enough.
Okay, Michael, consensual is better. Is that not happening?
It's not happening, Damien. And the point that I would make is, you know, Belinda puts the solicitors and the agents in the frame. We only do what our clients instruct us. And if the client says, no, don't go back with an offer, because actually what's been put to me is so off the radar that it just does not incentivize me. I've got more important things to deal with in my life than getting involved in this kind of stuff. So just don't make an offer back. Don't go back. So, you know, and actually it's worse than that, because I have clients now who are saying to me, can you put together a proactive strategy for us to remove telecoms assets from our investment portfolio, because we just don't want this anymore. And
that's a change, is it?
That's a change. That wasn't before. You know, we rolled out the previous networks by consensual agreements, and property owners were very happy to engage in that process. I've never seen this before. I've never seen property owners saying to me, right, Michael, I want you to devise a strategy for me that will see our assets cleared of telecoms.
John, have you seen the same degree of change?
We've certainly seen the hostility and the sort of the anti discussions and negotiations that are needed. What would concern me, though, is speaking to those individuals. If you said you're not going to have gas, electricity in those buildings, how they're going to then how they're going to use them, and build them going forward? So, you know, I do believe it's up to the agents and the legal advisors, etc., to help educate and advise them that it may not be the message they want to hear. There is a negotiation, a consensual arrangement to agree to, but we've all got to go down that journey, and we can't just say thank you for your advice and we'll put the file on hold, thank you very much. You've still got to maybe try and advise them of the need to go through with the negotiation, avoid the risk that there could be a certain tribunal in the day if they don't enter negotiations, and just support them in that education process. And it's that element I really feel that some of the market, some of the advisors on both sides, this is I'm talking industry wide, being neutral, that we all need to improve that, to help support and advise our clients accordingly.
And when you initiate that plea to negotiate and discuss and make offers, how is that typically received, that message?
Ultimately, people still look at the silo income stream and saying, I was getting X, I'm now going to be proposed to get Y, you know, go away. In those sort of terms, sometimes a bit harsher than that, you know. And it's that sort of view we've got to try and take them through the journey of why there's that change, advise on the change legislation, but also to try and get their feedback of how their buildings, how their land is being utilised, to try and understand where there is a loss of value or where they can attribute value to it. And that's the problem, is they're not looking at alternative ways of coming back to that consensual negotiation, which is why they need the agent stroke support, legal advisor support during that process.
Okay. Belinda, it doesn't feel like consensus is going to arrive anytime soon. So how would you break what risks being a stalemate?
Well, I think just picking up on what John said, and also really what Michael said, we need the property industry to take a lead on this. So we're at the London Real Estate Forum here. We've got a lot of the big developers and landowners across our capital city, which is well behind many of our European countries in terms of connectivity. And they need to take the lead. They need to be more proactive, to work with us. This is a piece of legislation that has been introduced to allow the coverage that we all want. We all want to use our mobile phones. And we need the property industry to take the lead in that and work with us. And I think that's not just the agents and the lawyers, but it is also the big property developers. But I think it's also the government as well. And we are definitely speaking to the government, because it is so disappointing when we hear that there's a piece of legislation out there that's actually not been properly implemented, and in certain circumstances just being ignored, actually. So we need the government to take a much more proactive approach and actually support the rollout of the code and the implementation of the code in the right way, so that we can all get this 5G connectivity that we want.
I'll come back to government, but your point about we need the property industry to take the lead, they would probably say the same of you.
Well, I think we are taking the lead. I think we're the ones who are taking these cases to tribunal to get the clarity. We're the ones who we're driving the valuation methodology. Certainly from a Cornerstone perspective, we've been out there doing a huge amount of training. And I think one of the problems is that somebody did mention it's 25, 30 years of a way of working, of a way of valuing property or telecoms infrastructure. And actually it's quite difficult to change people's perception, to change the culture about how we have to move forward. And that is hard, but we've been, you know, for the last 18 months, we've been rolling out extensive training programs across all our supplier base, across all our lawyers. But I think everyone has to accept we're learning too. Everyone seems to think that it's a piece of legislation and we've just, you know, rolled over and accept it. But we are learning on this as well. And we need to all work together to try and achieve that.
There was nodding around the table, I'm pleased to say, on that point. But John, just to bring you in on that breaking the stalemate point, what do you think is the way forward here?
Breaking the stalemate, I mean, it goes back to the ongoing education and how this infrastructure is actually used. Everyone wants the whistles and bells. We want to use mobile phone, but it's not the mobile phone. It's how we then use the mobile phone, how we use the applications. And everyone sells that, and it's glorious.
And we take it for granted.
And we take it for granted. But people have just disconnected the nice, shiny product, the apps, the applications, the cloud computing, the ability to do whatever we do as quickly as we can, like moving this studio down the road like you've done. But we need to have the infrastructure to permit that to happen. And there is that disconnect in the knowledge and understanding that we need, just like you have electricity, gas, water, you need to have the infrastructure to put through the connectivity. And I really keep on badgering on about the education and the market, that it's not one without the other.
Okay, thank you. And Michael, there is a responsibility here on landlords, and perhaps that should have been a question, actually. Do landlords feel a sense of responsibility here?
Some do, some don't. And Belinda talks about the property industry as though it's a single entity. But what we have to remember is that it's actually made up by a massive range of individuals, companies, various organisations. You know, and what works for a high value investor in the city centre of London doesn't necessarily work for somebody who's got a little bit of land in the suburbs that is really something that is very important to them individually, or an asset, a building that is their pension fund, etc. So the problem is you can't speak in these generic terms and say the industry needs to do this. You know, a lot of our clients are very, very sophisticated property people. If I sit down and start trying to lecture them and say, look, actually, you're missing the value here. You don't understand the real value in your asset, which is to make it available for telecoms use, so that with all the inconvenience that comes with that, people screwing into your building, bolting things onto it, climbing all over it, you don't realise that that's a real value to you. They're going to look at me and they're going to tell me to basically shut up, because they know value. They know their business. And I can't tell them that they're not understanding the real value of this.
There is always a danger that we talk about the property industry as if it is of one mind, and no industry is, of course. But I do wonder when the industry is embracing wired score ratings for connectivity as much as BREEAM ratings, whether there is that recognition that there is value in digital connectivity, and whether that is something that will prompt them to engage here more, perhaps.
Well, I think there is absolutely that recognition, but I think there's a differential here between, for example, street level connectivity, in building connectivity, and the major infrastructure, the large sites that go on the top of buildings that drive that. And I think landlords will readily accept that if they need in building connectivity, short wavelength 5G and all that kind of stuff, if they need that, then either they or the tenant will probably end up paying for it. I don't think there's a problem with that. Similarly, there may be arrangements with local authorities and so forth to grant access to lampposts and so forth to provide that kind of street level connectivity. So I'm sure all that can be overcome. But the fundamental problem is when you say to somebody, we want to put a big piece of kit on top of your trophy asset, and then have our engineers climbing up and down and bolting things on, and that could be a lot of kit. Oh, and by the way, we don't want to give you very much for doing that. Then that's where the NIMBY approach kicks in and says, well, we completely agree with all the objectives. Nobody, I don't think anybody would disagree that we need connectivity, we need to, UK PLC needs to lead the world and so forth. But the problem is they go, well, put it on somebody else's building.
Okay. I feel like I'm chairing a mediation session here, but I'm going to carry on in the hunt for a solution and hope it's not futile. John, Belinda raised the spectre of government there, and there is a danger when we talk about sustainability or many other issues in property, social impact, that unless the property industry embraces change, the dead hand of legislation will come down. Do you think that's a risk here? So is the property industry incentivized to come to the table consensually for fear that government might make this legislation more impactful?
No, I don't think so. I think at the moment they're still working away from that, and they're not expecting government to maybe come in and be more aggressive and make it more directed. So,
do you think it's a risk, though?
I think it is a risk, and I would urge people to get involved and for government to play more of a role in trying to ensure that the code delivers what it needs to do for us as a UK PLC. Just recently WiredScore, released their residential rating as well. It just shows the need. It's going across the whole spectrum. It's not just office buildings, it's across the retail, across the residential space as well. So we as an industry need to embrace it and make sure it works, and if we can't do it ourselves, then we might need support from our regulatory body, being the RICS, being it central government, to try and help drive and support the change. I also see it can change is never a good, people fear change. Change is a good thing, but people fear it. The build to rent market is a big change in how residential is managed, moving from the build to sell perspective. But the fundamentals of that business change is driven financially, and there are different benefits from it. And people must see that in terms of connectivity and infrastructure and the mobile rents. It's a different way of recognising the income value from the asset through different sources than maybe a traditional simple rental value through an agreement.
Okay, and if it doesn't come from central government is somewhat distracted at the moment, as we all know. Might it come from local government? Do planning regulations have a role to play here? Is there a different sort of form of Section 106 consideration in terms of, granting permissions that could be linked to digital connectivity?
Absolutely. I mean, I was recently chairing a session on placemaking and just discussed the issue of planning applications being sort of round hole square peg situation. It's a very legacy driven application form, and it's not dealing with the current environment as it is today. So yes, potentially 106 should be amended and other such opportunities.
Michael, on that point, do you think that if property companies don't embrace change and don't show willingness to change, that central or local government may step in and force change?
Well, I think some property companies will embrace the change. Some property companies will engage in this. They have corporate social responsibility policies, things like that. There's an argument to be made that, it's effectively doing your bit for the country, taking one for the team, so to speak. So some will buy into that, but I come back to the point that it's such a diverse industry that ultimately, in relation to any particular mast site, the individual or company that owns that potential mast site, that building or whatever, will need to be made to feel that it benefits them in some way, because the take one for the team approach will not work with everybody. Now, if you're looking at new legislation and so forth, planning and things like that, Of course, you could put planning conditions in that say where you build a new building, you have to design it ready to take telecoms kit. But, and Belinda's probably better to speak on this, and that may be a very good idea, but I don't see how that could deliver the sites in the volumes that we need them for 5G. And again, I think that's probably more Belinda's bag than mine. In terms of further regulation, further legislation, I think you'd have to go majorly draconian, frankly. You know, you'd effectively have to, because at the end of the day, what comes out of the tribunal at the moment is a piece of paper that says there are rights granted. It doesn't get anybody onto a building. If they turn up and knock on the door and the door's locked, then they need to find a way of unlocking that door. Now, the traditional way for the courts to deal with that is you fine somebody or you send somebody to prison. Well, if the company that owns that asset is a British Virgin Islands company with Channel Islands directors, Channel Islands corporate directors and so forth, who are you going to lock up? So the lock somebody up option for not opening the door probably doesn't work. So then you're into the, well, you have to give them the right to smash the door down and to smash every internal door and to go onto the roof to install their kit. And then when they come back to maintain it 3 weeks later and all those doors have been repaired and they're still locked, they'll have to do it again. So it's conflict. It's conflict all the way. And, you know, draconian legislation will just result in the property industry, certain sectors of the property, elements of the property industry, fighting back harder than they are at the moment because they feel there's an injustice.
Okay. Belinda, it's going to need a variety of tools here. That Michael's examples there may be useful in extremis, hopefully, rather than in most cases. But surely the thing that is going to, you know, unlock doors quickest is money.
Well, I think addressing one of the points that Michael raised on the planning, so the GLA are actually introducing this going forward as part of the Mayor's plan for a connected London. So they've got quite a lot of initiatives trying to drive this agenda because they recognise the need for digital connectivity in our capital city. So certainly any future development, I think the plan is that will have to take into account mobile, Wi-Fi and all the other connectivity platforms that we are looking for and making those buildings available for mobile infrastructure.
Planning doesn't deliver change quickly.
Though. It doesn't deliver. Well, none of this delivers change quickly, but I it's disappointing to hear Michael really looking at a lot of the negatives, and actually what we need are people to actually go out to the industry, everyone. And I understand the point about the property industry. It isn't, it's a very diverse sector, but as I say, we are in LREF today, where all the major players in the property industry are here. If they all went out with the same message and actually worked with us in a very proactive way, I think we could make some real progress in terms of implementing this piece of legislation.
Coming back to that money point, if the income earned from hosting the equipment is very much less than it used to be, going back to the sort of income generation that was benefiting landlords before may well reopen those doors. Is that a possibility? Would telecom companies be willing to do that?
Well, again, going back to legislation, and the legislation says there's consideration payable as well as compensation. So I think to mention that the landlord won't be compensated for his loss is not correct. And there is a consideration based on the valuation of the land, and we will actually look at how we value that. But then there is a realistic compensation based on the true loss to the landlord, which is what we want to discuss and negotiate with those landlords. And we are making it slow, I do accept that, but we are doing deals. And actually what we're finding is when we're actually going and meeting with site providers and landowners direct, and we are doing that, we're actually going down to the farms in where they are and trying to explain what we're all trying to achieve and what the legislation is there. And actually, when you start to explain to people in a very pragmatic way what this is all about and what the legislation says, they start to accept it. And we are trying to reach consensual deals based on the principles of the code, but we accept that we have to do a commercial or deal. But what we can't do is go back to where we were before the code, where unfortunately there were a lot of people making excessive amounts of money out of maybe ransom rents, etc., that just drove the cost of a mobile infrastructure sort of exponentially high.
Okay. John, do you think we've gone from one extreme to the other, where there were ransom rents previously and there are now unrealistically low rents being paid?
We have gone from one spectrum, one side of the spectrum to the other. But the key issue is there is a consensual deal trying to be sought in negotiations, and it needs both parties to engage. We're not going to go back to the rents that were previously paid. That is absolutely fair to say. And the operators are meant to be reinvesting that to make sure there is UK-wide coverage and capacity, so we get what we need. So that money's being reinvested. But we don't want to necessarily agree on the rates being set out initially. There is to be that negotiation, that consensual agreement, and both sides need to come to the table and say that my land is this, it's used for that, my building's used for why, this area of space is the opportunity for value is applied accordingly. But we need to have that engagement on both sides of the fence.
Okay, and do you see things getting better, John?
I see a small trickle increasing at the moment, but it's only small. And I honestly hope that we see a much sharper uptake as we come to the end of 2019, when you see the operators trying to roll out in the market the 5G services, as we've seen on the press releases from Three, from Vodafone, from EE and Telefonica. So we know they want to sell the phones on the high street and the consumers want to purchase it. We've somehow got to make it happen over the next 6 to 12 months. And that's big pressure on the industry and spokespeople like the people on this podcast.
Okay, I think that's probably as uplifting a note as we're going to end on. It'd be great to come back together in the coming months, maybe at LREF next year, to see if there has been progress. But clearly there's a need for further consensus, perhaps some change on both sides, some accommodation on both sides. But as I say, it's an important issue. In my intro, perhaps I should have referred to it as one of the thorniest issues in real estate today. But thank you very much for listening, and thank you all for coming into the studio today.